Okay, so imagine this. You're going through a divorce and you find out your spouse has been like secretly forwarding all your emails to themselves.
Oh, wow.
Is that legal? Should it be?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Oh, this isn't some crazy spy movie we're talking about.
Yeah.
This is a real life case, Epstein v. Epstein.
Okay, not the Epstein you might be thinking of, though.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Totally different Epstein. But what's so fascinating about this 2016 case from the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals is that it really throws the Federal Wiretap Act, which is a law, you know, designed to catch criminals, right into the middle of a messy divorce.
Yeah.
We've got court documents, legal analysis, and even a really fiery concurring opinion from the legendary Judge Posner.
Oh, nice.
So get ready to unpack how a law meant for spies and mobsters is suddenly dealing with marital disputes in the age of email.
Yeah, I mean it's a pretty big leap, right? From
Oh.
like organized crime to divorce court.
Exactly. And this deep dive is relevant, whether you're a lawyer, you know, navigating the digital minefield of evidence, or just fascinated by how technology is pushing the boundary of
Yeah.
our legal system.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is something that everyone's dealing with more and more these days. Like, where's the line?
Exactly.
Yeah.
To fully grasp the implications, let's rewind to 1970. We meet Barry and Paula Epstein. They get married, but of course things go sour, and they end up in divorce proceedings in 2011 in Cook County, Illinois.
Right.
But this wasn't your typical irreconcilable differences divorce. Paula accused Barry of repeated infidelity. So that kicks off a legal battle that is packed with more twists and turns than a John Grisham novel.
Oh, juicy.
Juicy, right?
Yeah.
During this whole discovery process, Barry wanted to see the evidence behind these infidelity accusations, right?
Sure.
So he requests any and all documents that are related to these claims. Paula then hands over copies of emails between Barry and other women, which, you know, seems to kind of confirm the infidelity, but then that raises a big question.
Yeah.
How did she get those emails?
Yeah, good question. You would think that would be like attorney-client privilege or something,
Right.
right?
It wasn't like Barry just handed over this smoking gun.
Right.
This is where things get really interesting. In 2014, Barry files a separate federal lawsuit against Paula and D, her attorney, Jay Frank.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And his claim, they violated the Federal Wiretap Act. So basically, the act makes it illegal to intercept electronic communications without consent. And Barry's alleging that Paula secretly set up an auto-forwarding rule on his email accounts. So copies of his messages were being sent to her without his knowledge.
So it's like she was spying on him
Yeah.
through his email.
So on top of the divorce drama, we now have a potential federal crime thrown into the mix. So did the court see it the same way?
Good question.
Well, the initial ruling in this federal lawsuit actually went against Barry. The district court judge dismissed his complaint against both Paula and her attorney.
So round one goes to Paula and her lawyer.
Round one goes to Paula, yes.
Yeah.
Case closed. Not quite. Barry was determined. He appeals to the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals. And this is when the real legal fireworks begin. Seventh Circuit issues a split decision, a real legal cliffhanger, I'd say.
Ooh, split decision. That's always fun.
They upheld the dismissal of the claims against Paula's lawyer, but reversed the dismissal against Paula herself.
Oh, interesting. So she's still potentially in trouble.
She is potentially in hot water, but her lawyer's in the clear.
Mm-hmm.
So Paula's maybe facing consequences under the Wiretap Act, but her lawyer isn't. What is the logic behind that?
Well, to understand the court's reasoning, we need to take a close look at the language of the Wiretap Act itself.
Okay.
Specifically, it prohibits the unauthorized interception of electronic communications during transmission.
During transmission.
Yeah, so in simpler terms, it's about catching someone snooping on messages while they're still in transit, like literally in the act of being sent.
So, are you telling me even in a messy divorce, this law about wiretapping could actually come into play?
It certainly can.
Wow. That's a little surprising.
Yeah, it's not just for, you know, like the FBI listening in on phone calls.
Right.
And that's why the timing of how Paula accessed those emails became really crucial to the case.
Okay.
So if she set up that forwarding while the emails were on their way to Barry's inbox, that could be a big problem. But if she accessed them after they were already stored on the server, it might be a different story.
Wait, so how an email travels technically makes a difference legally?
Absolutely.
That seems like it could get pretty complicated.
It definitely can. And that's what the judges were really hung up on. When exactly did Paula get those emails? To apply the Wiretap Act correctly, they needed to understand all those technical
So
details.
what happened next? Did they like hand the case over to a tech expert to figure out the email timeline or something?
Essentially, yes. The Seventh Circuit sent the case back to the lower court to determine the exact timing of when Paula intercepted those emails.
Wow, so Paula's legal fate was hanging in the balance of these technical details. But what about her lawyer, Frank? He was totally in the clear, right?
Right. The court found that because Barry himself had requested any and all documents related to the infidelity accusations, Frank wasn't actually disclosing the emails in a way that violated the Wiretap Act.
So he was just responding to a legitimate request.
Exactly.
So it seems like lawyers are generally safe.
Yeah.
As long as they're following those discovery rules, even if the material they hand over is a little bit controversial.
That's one of the key takeaways here for sure. But there's another twist in this story.
Yeah.
We have a fascinating concurring opinion from Judge Richard Posner.
Oh, Judge Posner. He's always good for some firework.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He did not disappoint in this case.
What did he have to say?
So Judge Posner, he agreed with the outcome, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he raised a very provocative question. Should the Wiretap Act, you know, a tool meant for catching criminals,
yeah,
should it really apply to a spouse who might be uncovering, you know, wrongdoing by their partner?
That's a bold statement.
Yeah.
So he's essentially saying that this law shouldn't even apply to this domestic dispute. What was his reasoning?
Well, he compared Paula to a bounty hunter exposing adultery.
Okay.
Which, believe it or not, is still a crime in Illinois.
Wait a minute. Adultery is a crime in some states.
In some states,
yeah. Yeah, I had no idea. But I guess that makes his point even stronger, right?
Right.
If she was uncovering a potential crime, should she really be punished under the Wiretap Act?
That's the debate he's sparking, and it's a tough one.
Yeah.
You know, on the one hand, we have this right to privacy in our digital lives, which is something the Wiretap Act is trying to protect.
Right.
But on the other hand, what happens when someone is using that privacy to hide, you know, potentially illegal or harmful behavior?
So where do we draw the line? Is it ever okay to snoop on your spouse's emails? Even if you suspect something's wrong, it just seems like a real ethical minefield.
Yeah, and you've hit on a crucial point there, the ethical considerations.
Mm-hmm.
Think about it from a lawyer's perspective. Okay, let's say a client comes to you with information, and they obtained it through, shall we say, less than legal means.
Right.
So what's your responsibility as an attorney?
Yeah, do you just turn a blind eye? Do you report it to the authorities? Do you use it to your client's advantage? I don't know.
There's no easy answer, unfortunately. The rules of professional conduct can vary.
Right.
But generally speaking, lawyers have a duty to both uphold the law and act ethically.
It's a tough balancing act.
It really is.
I mean, it makes you wonder, what did Paula's lawyer even advise her about forwarding those emails in the first place? Didn't he have some duty to warn her about the potential legal risks?
That's a great question. Unfortunately, we can't answer that definitively from the case documents.
All right, cool.
But the court did make a clear distinction that disclosing information in response to a discovery request, that's different from actively using that information in a way that violates the Wiretap Act.
So her lawyer was protected because he was just following the rules of discovery, not using the emails for some other purpose.
Exactly. But this case should serve as a cautionary tale for attorneys.
Yeah.
We need to be super careful when we're dealing with digital evidence, especially in, you know, emotionally charged cases like divorce.
It really highlights how technology is changing the legal landscape.
Mm.
It's like the law is constantly playing catch up with all the new gadgets and platforms and everything.
Absolutely. Emails, text messages, social media posts, it's all becoming key pieces of evidence in legal battles.
Yeah.
And as technology keeps blurring the lines between public and private, legal and illegal, the courts, they're going to have to adapt.
Epstein v. Epstein really drives that point home.
It does.
It's a wake-up call, not just for lawyers and judges, but really for anyone who uses electronic communication.
Yeah.
I bet most people don't even think about the legal implications of hitting send on an email or a text message.
You're right. We often don't consider those seemingly mundane actions can have serious consequences, especially when personal relationships break down.
So what does this all mean for the average person listening, and what can we learn from this case?
I think the key takeaway is to be more mindful of our digital footprint. We need to understand the laws governing electronic communication, you know, even if it means actually reading those lengthy terms of service agreements. Being aware of the potential consequences of our online actions is really crucial.
So you're saying we can't just plead ignorance anymore? Like, I didn't know I couldn't do that. That's not going to hold up in court.
Not anymore.
Okay.
We need to take responsibility. And maybe most importantly, we need to have some frank conversations with our partners, our families, friends, about our expectations for privacy and transparency in our relationships.
So setting clear boundaries and communicating openly can help prevent a lot of these misunderstandings and potential legal battles down the road.
Absolutely.
It's like almost like a digital prenuptial agreement.
That's a great way to put it.
Yeah. Ultimately, Epstein v. Epstein serves as a fascinating case study that raises some really complex questions about privacy, technology, and the law.
It really does.
It's a reminder that the digital world, for all its wonders, it's not a lawless frontier. Our actions online have real-world consequences. We all need to be aware of the legal and ethical stakes involved.
It's a reminder to stay vigilant, stay informed.
Well said. It really is a million-dollar question, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, Epstein v. Epstein throws a spotlight on that tension between privacy and transparency in our digital lives.
Right.
You know, on one hand, we all want our privacy protected, but we also want to shield ourselves from harm. We want open communication in our relationships. But do we really want, like, every email and text message to be scrutinized?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really delicate balancing act.
Yeah.
And as technology keeps, like, advancing, blurring those lines even further, these questions are just going to become more and more complex. Think about it, like the rise of smart home devices,
right,
wearable tech that's tracking our every move, and then you got AI that can analyze our data in ways that we can't even imagine.
Yeah.
These technologies, they offer these incredible benefits.
Yeah.
But the potential for misuse is real.
It's both exciting and terrifying at the same time.
It is.
So where do we go from here? What can we do to protect ourselves and make sure our digital lives don't turn into, you know, legal nightmares?
I think education is really paramount here. We need to understand the laws that are governing electronic communication, even if it means like slogging through those really long terms of service agreements, right?
Right.
Just being aware of the potential consequences of our online actions is crucial.
So you're saying we can't just plead ignorance anymore?
Yeah.
I didn't know I couldn't do that. It's not going to hold up in court.
Nope. Okay. Not anymore. We got to take responsibility for our digital footprint. And maybe, and this is probably the most important thing, we need to have some really honest conversations with our partners, families, friends about our expectations for privacy and transparency in our relationships.
So like setting clear boundaries and communicating openly.
Exactly.
Can help prevent a lot of these misunderstandings and potential legal battles down the road.
Absolutely.
Almost like it's like a digital prenup.
Yeah, that's a great analogy.
Right.
Ultimately, you know, Epstein v. Epstein, it serves as this fascinating case study, right?
Yeah.
That raises, I think, some really complex questions about privacy, technology, and the law.
It's a reminder that the digital world, you know, for all its wonders, it's not a lawless frontier.
You know.
Our actions online have real-world consequences, and we all need to be aware of the legal and ethical stakes involved.
Yeah. It's a reminder to stay vigilant, stay informed.
Well said. Well, folks, that concludes our deep dive into this very intriguing world of Epstein v. Epstein. We hope that this exploration was enlightening, maybe even a little bit unsettling.
A little bit, yeah.
After all, the aim of the deep dive is not to just inform, but to really provoke, challenge those assumptions, and to leave you with maybe more questions than answers.
It's about sparking that curiosity, right?
Like,
getting people to think about things a little differently.
Keep those questions swirling. Keep exploring this ever-evolving intersection of technology, law, and our everyday lives.
Absolutely.
Until next time, stay curious, stay informed, and stay safe out there in the digital world.
Stay safe.